In the previous Mishnah, we saw a scenario where Reuven, for example, gave money to Shimon for him to spend, and it emerged later on that money was hektish, and therefore Me'ilah was violated. And in the scenario of the previous Mishnah, Reuven gave Shimon one pruta coin. A pruta is the minimum value for which one is liable to Me'ilah. If he uses something belonging to the Beis HaMikdosh, which is worth at least a pruta, a shavet pruta, then he would be liable to the various punishments given for Me'ilah. Now, in the previous Mishnah, Shimon followed Reuven's instructions with regards to only half of the pruta coin that he received. And as we've seen in the previous Mishnayos, if somebody appoints a messenger or an agent to use something which is hekdesh, if the messenger follows his instructions fully, then the one who appointed him will be the one to violate Me'ilah. Whereas if he deviates from his instructions, then he's not considered to be a messenger of that person anymore. So he himself, the one who actually did the action of spending the money or using the hekdesh, he'll be the one to violate Me'ilah. So in the previous Mishnah, Reuven gave Shimon one pruta, and Shimon followed Reuven's instructions with regards to half the pruta. So in terms of that half pruta, Reuven should be the one to violate Me'ilah. In terms of the second half, Shimon will be the one to violate Me'ilah. And it emerges that each one of them did not violate Me'ilah with enough money, enough value of a shavet pruta to be liable, and therefore both of them will not be liable. In this Mishnah, we're going to see a scenario where both of them will be liable to Me'ilah. Not only shtei prutais, if Reuven gave Shimon two pruta coins to spend, later on it emerged to be hekdesh, and the instructions that Reuven gave Shimon were as follows. Oh my lord, Reuven said to Shimon, Haveli esrog, buy me an esrog with these two pruta coins. V'holach v'hevi loy b'pruta esrog v'pruta rimon. But instead, Shimon went and he spent the money and he bought an esrog with one pruta coin and a pomegranate with the other pruta coin. Now, if you understand the case simply, then only Shimon will be the one to violate Me'ilah, because if you think about it, none of Reuven's instructions were followed. Reuven wanted an esrog which is worth two prutas, not an esrog which is worth one pruta, and therefore, even with regards to the pruta that was spent on an esrog, that's not in accordance with Reuven's instructions, and therefore Reuven will not violate Me'ilah at all. Only Shimon will violate Me'ilah with both prutas. However, the Gemara explains that we're talking about a case where the esrog which Shimon bought is in reality worth, in the market, two pruta coins. Just that Shimon managed to bargain enough, and he only had to spend one pruta coin on obtaining that esrog which is actually worth two pruta coins. And therefore, according to the first opinion of the Mishnah, Shnei Amalu, both Reuven and Shimon have violated Me'ilah, because Reuven's instructions were followed. Shimon obtained an esrog for him, which is worth two prutas, and therefore with regards to the pruta spent on the esrog, Reuven violated Me'ilah. Whereas the second pruta, which was spent on the pomegranate, obviously that is not in accordance with the instructions of Reuven, and therefore Shimon would have violated Me'ilah with that second pruta coin. Now Rabbi Yehuda says that even with regards to the esrog, although it's true that it was worth two prutas, that's still not considered to be a fulfillment of Reuven's instructions. Because if you think about it, if you manage to get an esrog worth two prutas by spending one pruta coin, then if he would have spent both coins, he would have been able to get an even nicer esrog. And therefore he has not fulfilled the true wishes and instructions of Reuven. And therefore, Barabbas lo mo'al, Reuven, who's appointed the messenger, has not violated Me'ilah, shehu omeloi, because he can claim to Shimon, esrog gadol isim avakesh. I was requesting a large, better quality esrog, vehevesli cotton vara, but you bought me a smaller and worse quality esrog in relation to that which you could have bought me had you spent the full two prutois that I gave you. The mission now brings a very similar scenario. Not only dinar zahav, if Reuven gave a golden dinar coin to Shimon to spend, and omeloi, he told Shimon, Hove li chaluk, buy me a type of shirt with that dinar coin. Now, a golden dinar is worth roughly 6 sela, and v'holach v'hevi loy b'sholish chaluk, b'sholish talis. Instead of spending the full 6 sela, which is a golden dinar, on buying a shirt, he spent 3 sela, half of the amount, on a shirt, and the remaining 3 sela he spent on a cloak. A different item, and the Gemara explains once again, we're talking about a case where the shirt that he bought was actually worth a golden dinar, but Shimon managed to buy it for only half the price for 3 sela. In this case, according to the Tanakama, Shnei Amalu, both of them have violated Me'ilah. This is considered to be a fulfillment of Reuven's instructions, at least with regards to the amount that he bought, spent on the shirt, but Rabbi Yehuda says that even with regards to that which was spent on the shirt, it's not considered to be a fulfillment of Reuven's instructions, because Balabais le'mo'al, Reuven has not violated Me'ilah, Shehu Omerloi, because he can claim to Shimon, Cholu Godol Isim Avakesh, I was requesting a larger, better quality shirt. And in relation to that which you could have bought me with the full amount of money that I gave you, they basically cotton vara. You bought me something which is smaller and of worse quality, and therefore none of my instructions were fulfilled, so I have not violated Me'ilah. Only Shimon would have violated Me'ilah in that case with all of the money that he spent. Mishnah Hey, a mafkid ma'isit ala shulchani, somebody who gives money to a money changer for him to look after. Reuven has some money, he's going away, and he needs that money to be looked after by somebody, and he gives it to a money changer. Now, a money changer uses money all day. If he receives money to look after, the understood agreement between them is that Reuven allows him to use that money as well. He just wants him to pay back that same value of money when he comes back. But he doesn't have to guard over those particular coins. He can use those coins and give back other coins. That having been said, in Tsururin, if Reuven gives over the money tied up in a bundle with a special, unique knot, so then he is indicating that he does not want the money changer to use that money. And indeed, Lo Yishtamish Bohen, the money changer would be forbidden to use that money, and would rather need to just look after the money as he agreed, and when it comes to the agreed upon time, he will give back that same money to Reuven. Now, because the money changer is not allowed to use that money, it's still considered to be fully in the domain of Reuven. Now, by the way, we're talking about a case where it later emerges that that money belonged to Hekdash. So when we say in the domain of Reuven, in reality, it's been in the domain of the Beis Hamikdash all of this time. The point is that he hasn't transferred its domain into somebody else's domain and under their jurisdiction for them to use, and therefore, Lefichach, therefore, im hoitzi, if the money changer went ahead and spent that money illegally, because he wasn't allowed to, he is now doing an action of taking that money, which is in the domain still of the Beis HaMikdash, and putting it into the domain of somebody else for the other person to now use. That is a classic act of Me'ilah, so Mo'al, he would have violated Me'ilah. On the other hand, in Mutarim, if Reuven gave the money changer the money untied, then the understanding between them is that he's giving it over to him, that Yishtamish Bohen, that the money changer is able to use that money. Which means that already when Reuven gives the money to the money changer, he's effectively putting it into the domain of a regular individual, the money changer, for him to use. And therefore Reuven is the one who would violate Me'ilah already from that stage. Lefichach, therefore, im hoitzi, if the money changer goes ahead and spends that money, or exchanges it with somebody else, then lo ma'al, that is not an act of Me'ilah, because it's already in his domain fully. Reuven already took it out of the domain of Hekdash, and therefore Shimon already does not violate Me'ilah. Next case, Itzel Balabais. What happens if somebody gives money to a regular owner of a house, a regular person who's not a money changer? He's not somebody who's using money all day. In this case, Benkach or Benkach, whether the money is tied up in a knot, or even if it's not tied up at all, and he just gives him money, the understanding between them is obviously that he just wants him to look after the money. And as long as Reuven didn't explicitly give permission to this person for him to use the money, Lo Yishtamish Bohen, he's not able to use the money, he just needs to look after it. Now, because he's not able to use the money, that means that by Reuven giving him the money for him to look after, he's not taking it out of the domain of Hekdash. Quite the opposite, he's getting somebody to look after the money. And because of that, Lefichach, therefore, im hoitzi, if this person who's looking after the money goes ahead and spends that money, he is now doing an act of putting that Hekdash money into somebody else's domain, and therefore, mo'al, he would have violated Me'ilah. The third scenario that the Mishnah talks about is Hachenveni, a shopkeeper. On the one hand, a shopkeeper doesn't need money all day like a money changer. On the other hand, he is in constant need of cash for the sake of giving people change. So the question is, what is the understood agreement as to whether he is able to use the money, in which case Reuven would have violated Me'ilah by giving it to him, and automatically when he himself, the shopkeeper himself, spends that money, it would not be an act of Me'ilah, because it's already been put into his own domain. Or do we say he's like a regular individual who's not allowed to use the money, in which case when Reuven gave it over to him, he didn't take it out of the domain of Hekdash. Which means that when he, the shopkeeper, spends it, he would have violated Me'ilah. So according to the first opinion, Kabbalah Bias, he has the same status as a regular person who is not allowed to use it. Rabbi Meir, that's the opinion of Rabbi Meir. But Rabbi Huda says that Kashulchan, he's got the same status as a money changer, which means that their understanding is that he can use it because he's in constant need of money. And therefore it's only Reuven who would violate Me'ilah, but not the shopkeeper if he spends it later on. Mishnah Vav, the final Mishnah of the Masechta, Pruta Shel Hekdash, if a Hekdash Pruta coin, Shenofla L'Secha Kis, it falls into a pouch which contains lots of other coins, which do not have sanctity, they're regular coins. Oy She'omar, or if somebody says, Pruta Bekis Zeh Hekdash, I want one of the Pruta coins in this pouch, which contains many, many coins, to be Hekdash, to be designated to the Beis HaMikdash. And later on, he forgot about it. Be as it may, we have a case where we've got lots of coins, and one of them belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, and we're unsure which of those coins is the Hekdash coin which belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. Kevan Shehotzi Asar HaShayna, as soon as he spends even one of those coins, there's now a possibility that he violated Me'ilah, and according to Rabbi Akiva, Mo'al, it's considered to be that he has possibly violated Me'ilah. Div Rabbi Akiva, that's the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, who we learnt in Maseches Krisus is of the opinion that even in the case of Me'ilah, where the punishment for Me'ilah is not a Korban Chatos, but it's rather to bring a Korban Asham, even in such a case, if somebody is in a doubt as to whether he's obligated to bring a Korban having violated Me'ilah, he would need to bring a Korban Asham Toloi, which is what the Torah prescribes that somebody who is in doubt as to whether he is liable to bring a Korban Chatos is obligated to bring. According to Rabbi Akiva, the same applies to somebody who possibly is obligated to bring a Korban Asham. He's also obligated to bring this unique type of Korban that is bought when somebody is under doubt as to whether he violated such a prohibition. However, the Chachomim say that since the punishment for somebody who knows that he's violated Me'ilah is to bring a Korban Asham, not to bring a regular Korban Chatos, which is the regular Korban which one needs to bring to atone for a sin, because of that, the concept of bringing a Korban Asham Toloi in a case of a doubt does not exist. And therefore, only Achiyotzias Kol HaKis, once he's spent all of the money and he can be sure that he has violated Me'ilah, only then would he be obligated to bring a Korban Asham for having definitely violated Me'ilah. Continues the Mishnah, Modi Rabbi Akiva agrees, but Omer, in a case where somebody says, Pruta Min HaKis Zeh Hekdash, literally translated, that means that one pruta from this pouch of money is hekdash. The Gemara explains we're talking of a case where it is made clear that the declaration that he's making is that he doesn't want this whole pouch of money to be spent unless there's going to be hekdash. And that's interpreted to mean that he wants the very last coin which remains to be hekdash. And therefore, in that case, Shehumotzi v'holeich, he's able to continuously spend the money of that pouch, ad sheyotzias kol hakis, until it's a matter of spending all of the money, and he only needs to leave that last coin which remains in the pouch, because that would be the coin which will become hekdash and be designated to the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore it's that coin that he is not able to spend. But all of the other coins of the pouch he is able to spend. Soling v'seches me'ila mazal tov. We begin Be'ezus Hashem Maseches Tomid, which is essentially a recording of that which went on in the Beis HaMikdash daily. And the Masechta is called after the Korban Tomid, which was the sacrifice which was offered up in the Beis HaMikdash every single day. There was actually two of these sacrifices. One was the first Korban, the first sacrifice to be bought in the entire day. And the second one was the last Korban, the last sacrifice to be bought every single day. Now, the Masechta that immediately follows after Maseches Tomid is Maseches Midas, which is a description of the Beis HaMikdash and that which was contained within the Beis HaMikdash. And the Rambam already takes note of the fact that these two Masechtas are quite unique in that instead of being a set of laws, like most of the other Masechtas, it's really much more of a factual description of either the procedures or that which was within the Beis HaMikdash. And the Mishnayos are not there to set down laws. Be as it may, the Masechta opens up by talking about the 21 locations within the compound of the Beis HaMikdash that there were individual guards that stood there. The purpose of these guards, the Pasuk already indicates, was not for the sake of protecting the safety of the Beis HaMikdash and that which was within the Beis HaMikdash. Rather, their function was to increase the honor of the Beis HaMikdash and of Hashem, essentially, by constantly watching over the Beis HaMikdash. B'shloish mekoymos ha-kohanim shomim Beis HaMikdash, there were three locations in the Beis HaMikdash where individual kohanim would be guarding. The remaining 18 out of the 21 locations which would be guarded were guarded by Levi'im, but 3 out of the 21 locations were guarded by individual Koyanim. The first of those locations was Beveis HaVtinas in the chamber of Avtinas. The second one was Beveis HaNitzaitz in this other chamber called the Beveis HaNitzaitz. And the third location was Beveis HaMoked in the Beveis HaMoked, which was a very large room where a fire was burning. And the exact functions of each of these chambers will be described in more detail in the next Masechta, Maseches Middos. That having been said, the Mishnah does give a very brief description of these three rooms. Beveis HaVtinas uBeveis HaNitzaitz, the two first chambers that were mentioned, Hayu Aliyos, were raised rooms. They were sort of platforms which were raised above the ground level, and they didn't have any roofs, and because it could be very cold at night, as well as because of the fact that there were lots of stairs to get up there, the Horevim Shomrim Sham, the very young Kohanim would be the ones to guard those locations. We're referring to Kohanim who were under the age of 20, and therefore they were too young to be part of the actual service of the Beis HaMikdash. But they could have the job of guarding, and Beis HaMoked, the third room which was mentioned, this was a regular room built on the ground, and Kippah, it had a dome as its roof. Ubayis Gadol Haya, it was a very large room. Mukov Rovdim Shel Even, it was surrounded by short stone platforms which were raised one above the other, very much like steps going up towards the wall. So all of the outer part of this room was made up of these steps. The Zikne Beis Avishenim Shom and the older Koyanim out of the Koyanim who were serving the Beis HaMikdash that week would be able to sleep there on each step. And these steps went around the whole room, so there was enough for all of those older Koyanim. Umavtcheis Ha'azor B'yodom, and the older Koyanim were the ones who held onto the keys to the Beis HaMikdash courtyard. Upirche Kehuna, and the younger Koyanim, we're talking about Koyanim who are older than the age of 20, they're fit to do the service of the Beis HaMikdash, but they are younger than the other Koyanim. Ishkistei Ba'aretz, each of them would have their own sheets, or what they needed to sleep with, on the ground. They wouldn't sleep on these stone steps going around the room, but rather they would sleep in the middle of the room on the ground. Continues the Mishnah, Lo Hayu Yoshenim Bevigdei Kodesh, the Kohanim would not sleep with the holy items of clothing that they would use in the actual service of the Beis HaMikdash. Elo Poshtin or Bekaplin, they would rather take the clothes off and fold them up, Umenichinos and Tachas Rasheen, and place them underneath their heads. The Gemara actually explains they wouldn't place them underneath their heads, they would place them next to their heads as they slept. Umuskasim Bechsos Atzmon, and they would wear their own clothes during the night. It would, of course, be disrespectful to use those holy items of clothing even when they slept. Now, a Baal Keri is a man who experiences certain substances leaving his body, and when this occurs, he becomes tomei, he becomes impure, and he needs to go to a mikveh, a body of water in which he immerses himself fully, and that would purify him. However, he would still have a small level of tumah, of impurity, for the rest of that day, even after having gone to the mikveh. He'll be known as a tevul yoim. That means somebody who has been to the mikveh, but he's still waiting until the end of that day in order to be fully pure. And a tevul yoim is not able to perform the service of the Beis HaMikdash. So the Mishnah says, what happens if Eyar Keri L'Echad Mehem, if one of the Koyanim experiences these substances leaving his body whilst he's sleeping at night, and he has become a Baal Keri, so he's not going to be able to perform the service in the Beis HaMikdash, and as well as that, because he's impure, he needs to leave the Beis HaMikdash. Somebody who is impure is not allowed to be in the Beis HaMikdash. However, the problem is, the doors to get out of the Beis HaMikdash are locked. So what should be done? Firstly, he needs to purify himself. So Yotzev HaHolich L'Mesiba HaYileches Tachas Abira, he should leave that room, the Beis HaMoked, where they were sleeping, and he should go through the tunnel which went underneath the building of the Beis HaMikdash. The Haneris Dolkin Mekana Mekan, there would be lights, candles which were lit on either side of the tunnel so that he would be able to see where he was going. Ad Shumagia L'Beis HaTzvila, until he would reach a chamber where he could go to the mikveh in that chamber. Umudura Hisasham, there was a very large fire there in order for him to warm up, Ubeis Kisei Shel Kovod, and a literally honorable bathroom. A bathroom which preserved the honor of those who were there. What exactly does that mean? Vezehoya Kovodai. In the following way did it preserve the honor of those who were there. Mitzotai Notl, if somebody were to find the door of the bathroom locked, then Yodea Shesham Adam, one would know that there was somebody in there. Pasuach, if it was open, Yodea Shesham Adam, it would be known that nobody was there. That way, nobody would end up walking in when somebody was already there. Yorad V'Toval, he would go down into the mikveh and immerse himself fully. Ola, he would come out of the mikveh, Vinis Tapog, and dry himself. Vinis Chayim Kenegram Dura, he would warm himself up opposite the fire. And then, Bov Yoshav Le'etzel Echav HaKoyanim, he would return to sit where the rest of the Koyanim were sleeping, Ad Shish Oyim Niftochim, until the gates of the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdosh will be opened in the early morning, and then Yotzev HaHoylech Loi, he will leave himself and go home because he's no longer able to perform the service of the Beis HaMikdosh, at least on that day.